I was thinking this morning about the word implanted. That contains the word plant. That's very interesting to me. Interesting because we don't actually know what's happening here. Kahujali spoke the other day about 100,000-year history of ayahuasca use among indigenous peoples, and that as late as only 10 years ago, the ayahuasca grandfathers received a message from the plant. This medicine would now be offered to people from all over the world. Perhaps in sort of a self-survival mechanism. If you look at, you know, the planetary whole, you see humanity in many ways crushing the planet. And so perhaps this is, as an organic whole, this is the one aspect of that organic whole coming to the aid of another part of that organic whole to create balance, harmony, and to sustain itself, to create preservation of the whole. What that means and the implications for us, because if we're talking only 10 years ago that this information came from the ayahuasca abuelas or grandfathers, this is it. I mean, we're it in a very big way. I mean, we're like the experimental group. We're the guinea pigs. So there's an extraordinary sacredness around the very fact that we're here. It's really hard to put into words. Because this is a fact. I mean, up until just a short time ago, this was a journey and a plant medicine that was only available to indigenous peoples. Now, the whole culture of its use in indigenous cultures is entirely different from what our use of it is here. Let me try to explain what I mean by that. In indigenous culture, that ayahuasca is growing, you know, in the village, in the gardens outside the village, and so they would have sort of a sociological, cultural access to this that goes on from the moment the children are born until their old age. So they're steeped in the use of this medicine. For many Western people, and perhaps the opportunity of Western people coming to this sacred plant medicine, you have to consider the possibility that many of the people from throughout the world, as Kahujali spoke about, just in these workshops that we do here, we've now had people in it's mind-boggling to me, because in, say, the first 200 people that have come here, they've happened to have come from 37 different countries on 6 different continents. Now, who organized that? I assure you it wasn't me. So this is an unbelievably sacred journey, and it's right here now. It's right in front of us, and this, the potential that we have to look at it and to open ourselves up to this process is there for us. There's things happening on several levels when you drink ayahuasca. It's been said that ayahuasca rewires your brain. This is actually true. and there's new neural connections being made in the brain. The way your brain actually functions changes during the ayahuasca state and in the post-ayahuasca brain. One of the things that happens is that in a sort of the linear logical TikTok mode brain, the two hemispheres of the brain operate basically you operate with half a brain is what it amounts to at any given instant of time based on sensory input. If the sensory input that you're getting is analytical in nature, the left hemisphere of the brain is turned on and the right hemisphere of the brain is basically shut down. If the sensory input is intuitive or emotionally based, then the opposite happens. There have been some studies done that show in the post-ayahuasca brain that new neural connections are made between the two hemispheres of the brain, so that then on basically any sensory input, the brain begins to operate with these two functions simultaneously, an analytical and an intuitive function. In addition to that, one of the things that's fascinated me over the last, say, 2 years, that is a possibility, and I put that out there beforehand because it's an idea. I've been very interested in this idea of the neurological centers that exist in the heart. There's an article in the back of your book called The Energetic Heart. In this article, it speaks of essentially what constitutes a second human brain with neurological function that is on the heart physically, and that a person who is in a fairly open, appreciative, resolved state emotionally creates a mechanism that basically tells the brain how to think. You can sort of picture this because if you generally have a belief pattern that, you know, your world is safe, that you're in control, that you don't need to be afraid, even at the extreme, because you've sort of perhaps resolve some of the issues that have to do with the source of all fears, which is the fear of mortality, of dying. And so you would think that, you know, if I'm walking down the street and some guy happens to, you know, have a flat tire and bang up over the curb and wipes me out, there, you know, I'm fine. You know, at least, you know, I had a good run for 53 years or whatever. But you're resolved, and so that would put you from this direction of your heart. The neurological centers of your heart would tell your brain basically to operate in a way that sort of elucidates the idea of safety and peace and harmony with your environment. Conversely, if say the opposite is true, and you've got this anxiety, you've got this, you know, sort of scared of your own shadow thing, then that's exactly what's going to happen. You know, you walk down an alley and a street light will literally make your shadow sort of do one of those, you know, things where it starts out small and then suddenly grows onto the wall like some looming monster, and you will be scared of your own shadow because your mind is expecting to see something that can cause you danger. Now, the irony of this is that in terms of the physiological function of the body, the exact opposite of what should happen happens. Instead of being in a heart-centered mode where this neurological center is basically dictating how you think, how you process thoughts, how you process problems, this sort of thing, the opposite is true. Your brain is saying, oh my God, it's my own shadow, dumping adrenaline into your bloodstream, taxing the heart, putting the heart into sort of flight or fight mode. And ironically, in all these Western cultures, What's the one of the leading causes of death? The stress of our lives. The stress of surviving all of that. The stress of worry over this and this and this. And the belief pattern that sort of resonates from our ideas of how tough life is, or you know, this is never going to be good, or when I finally get this done, then I can finally be me, you know? And I mean, that's, just think about that. There's an idea, sort of a concept that a teacher gave me once, that said, try to never say two things. Try to never say if only or I wish. Because if only is sort of is suspending yourself into a reality of the past that has to do with all the things, all the deeds, dirty deeds that you wish you could do over again. If only this didn't happen, if only this didn't happen, if only she didn't rob my money. If only she didn't. Yeah, there are any number of things. I mean, my whole life is full of if onlys. But the whole point is, you can sit there and spend your life wishing this and this and this never happened, and so you're occupied with something that's not real, something that's gone. You know, you can never do anything tomorrow that'll prepare you to be who you are. Who you are is who you are right now. There's no preparation, there's no new home, there's no new partner, there's no new anything where you will finally arrive at who you're going to be. That's a lost cause. And so part of this journey to sacredness is just a journey to stillness. The only thing that the plants would want us to do is just to stop and listen. To actually show up for your life. You know, so, I mean, you can really only show up in one way, is that's by being absolutely present with the sacredness of your life. And the sacredness of your life includes, you know, if you live in North Carolina, includes North Carolina. If it includes your mailman, it includes the people who provide services to you. It includes the workers, the workers that you can't stand. It includes all sorts of people that are right there in front of you today. And people in each case that you have the opportunity to look at them in their eyes, to have a human connection with, which probably takes in many cases less time than it does to completely ignore them and to pretend as if they're some kind of, you know, like iRobot, you know, serving you a beer or something like that. You know, because you can run into a store for a pack of gum, whatever, and you can just you can treat a human being as if they're something less than a human being, because you need what you need now. And give me a pack of gum, give me a pack of Marlboro Lights, whatever. And just sort of get in and get out kind of thing. But right there, in the stillness of that moment, the only thing that in that moment is actually real in your life. Because any agenda that you got for the rest of the day is not real. Any future accomplishment of your greatness that you plan on is not real. The lotto win is not real. The you know, new custom home is not real. That's all a projection into the future. that you spend hours and hours, and you actually will live your life without even arriving for your life, for the sacredness of all the people, all the beauty that is right in front of you, right where you are. Wherever you are, that's where you are. It's like coming to a place of being still and stationary, and your life will move towards you. And it's comes in a language, and this is really also a discussion about how your life changes in this sort of after being implanted mode, how your life changes in this sort of rewiring mode, because you have turned on a brain function, you've turned on a perception that you didn't have before. We don't know, again, because we're the sort of the experimental lot, essentially, if you consider, I don't know, I'm sure there's several thousand people from Western cultures that have taken ayahuasca, but I don't know. Well, maybe it's 10,000 by now, but it's probably not 100,000. But if you consider that there's not a lot that have taken it, and there certainly hasn't been a lot of real, there hasn't been enough time to really evaluate what it is in fact about. But the neurological centers, or the awareness, or the perception that is perhaps being activated by ayahuasca, is on a whole new realm beyond anything that we could imagine. And so your experiences with in your dreams and in your waking state in terms of perception could change dramatically. Certainly, I think you could have an awareness of is a more sort of a fine-tuned awareness of a phenomenon of synchronicity in your life, where people, places, events will flow towards you as you're in this stationary present, not suspended in the past or future mode, that a person that will show up in your life, which may be the person that delivers your mail, who you've just now decided you will like actually treat as a human being and say good morning or whatever, but the person who delivers your mail is some piece or some link into some greater direction that your life will take. It's diametrically, it's, what would I say here? It's like you're not going to be used to it. There's no way that you'll be used to this, because you've lived your entire life by planning agendas, survival, leaning into the future you, the future well-educated, one more course under your belt, one more whatever you're sort of leaning into, you that'll never arrive, and you're well practiced at that. So that's problematical right from the beginning. There's in every one of us enormous habitual behavior that has received huge reinforcement, because we all actually have survived. We all actually did make it here. And so there's the habitual behavior of mind and ego is what got us here. And to remember whatever it is that you're shown, to begin to show up for your life, to slow down, to begin to listen, is going to go against the grain of everything that you've had reinforcement actually works. And there certainly is an activation, there's a biological switch that's turned on, there's a whole visionary brain, sleeping brain that is suddenly woken up. And and my recommendation is to show up and then begin to really believe in yourself, to believe that you can let go of this sort of unreality of some future you that's never going to arrive, to be absolutely okay with who you are, where you are in this moment, to go into that place. Perhaps, I don't know what this sort of heart center is about, but perhaps it's a place that occupies Aluna and this three-dimensional reality at the same time. Perhaps it's some kind of a crossroads. And it's not something that will logically ever make sense. There'll be no deduction that or reason that will get you to this place. It's more of a knowing of something inside of you that exists in another world. And your awareness from that place will bring your life, your direction, your destiny, all the people that you will have rich, beautiful interactions with straight to you. To conclude, there's a layer, I feel like I bit off way more than I could chew the first glass of ayahuasca that I drank. But there's a great deal of responsibility that comes with the sacredness of this teacher and the sacredness of your lives. There's no avoiding who you actually are. Because there's actually been someone that it's like the idea of, for the lack of a better term, I'll call it what is and what isn't. So every action, every motivation, every manipulation, every sincere love, every beautiful thing that you've shown to another human being, every rotten thing that you did, everything either happened or it didn't happen. And there was someone there that witnessed it, that was there. For everything that you did do or didn't do, there was someone there. And there's like this digital imprint on reality that is a representation of all those things. And the person that was there was you. So there's like, and we have this idea that just because we don't remember things, we can separate from that part of ourself that retains a memory of everything and go into a mode where it didn't happen. There's been someone standing right on your shoulder from the moment you were born, jotting down notes of every single thing. You know, there's two water bottles on this table. 100 years from now, this is completely irrelevant. But in fact, there are only two. There's not three. So nobody could ever say that there's three. There's only two. So that's what is versus something else isn't. So our kindnesses, our authenticity, being real, being who we are, owning all the, looking for the bastard inside of us. I was talking to Alan, or Alan was at the table and someone else was at the table and they were talking about their children, and I said, well, then you're doing your job, because in a way, at some point in time, our children will look at us as their greatest teachers, but complete bastards. So, you know, if you're a complete bastard, you're a parent, and you're doing your job. And there's some mechanism in there that you are who you are, and there will always be a perception from a child that they can't stand the space that you occupy. But it's in that sort of confrontation that they learn something about themselves, and at some point you become a grand maestro to them. That's a beautiful story that you told, Kahujali. The only thing you get to be is who you are. That's it. Thank you.